Welcome to That Moto Show with Dirt Bike TV's Jake Clark and producer Donnie Bales.
Okay, so that's podcast number 10 of our tech podcast. 10. Who was cool number 10s? We were saying Larry Ward.
Larry Ward was one.
Damon Huffman was one. Brayton?
Years past. Damon Bradshaw was one.
Damon Bradshaw. Yeah. And the Manchester
Honda. Yeah, when he went back. He won a mud race or something that year on that bike.
So, number 10.
Number 10.
Not too many 10s right now.
No. Does anyone have it right now that I can think of?
I don't think so.
Oh, I don't know.
That's weird. Yeah. That I don't know why. Weird. Like, because I think it's open. I don't know how that works. Who has 10? Someone will write us in the comments as to who has 10.
Who has 10.
All right. So, our podcast here's going. Donnie, how was it? How is it with no Supercross race on a Saturday night?
Well, first, hold on a second. Mm-hmm. I know that this is a little bit retroactive, but I need to go back. We have to go back to the Supercross before.
But this is going
to
be old news by then.
I don't care.
Okay. The Supercross season has been fun watching.
Eli won,
yes.
And so that's the only thing we have to talk about.
Is number three.
That he won a race. And by the way, I told you I've been in the fantasy league with JL, and I actually won this because I just keep marking it down that Eli's going to win.
You put Eli every time.
Every week. And then GL, of course, made a bunch of jokes.
By the 10th week, he knew he'd have it.
I'd have it, yeah. Right. But I'm just happy about that, and I'm happy he's not going to go all season without a win, and I'm happy that it's number 52, so it's even more difficult for everybody behind him to catch him. That's all I want to say.
Well, there's this young guy who thinks he's not going to have any problem catching.
Listen to me. When he gets to 50, I'll go ahead and say looking good.
All right.
It's assuming you're going to be alive.
Right. You know something I don't know, Spencer?
I'm just saying I don't think I'll be alive either.
Right. All right. Spencer's here, and this might be his last show for a while, unless it lines up when he's in town. But they're going back to real life.
We'll have a special guest appearance of Spencer.
Right. Okay. So he's going back to Utah. So it will be sad around the household.
I really believe that he I like having him here. First of all, I'm basically a moron. I don't read nearly as well. Right. And so having Spencer here though is always much better. I like it.
So
well,
let's talk about your bike behind you, Spence.
Yeah,
you've been riding a lot this winter.
It has 37 hours. I just checked.
37 hours. Yeah. 24 CRF 450 RX, and this bike has been surprisingly amazing.
Yeah, it really shocked me because I'd never really consistently ridden a 450. We have a 450 EXE. That's the only other 450 we really own. And so I've been riding this a ton on the trail and then a bunch on the track at Glen Helen and stuff like that. And I've loved it. It really is not that gnarly. I thought it would be scarier or gnarlier, but it's a really well-rounded bike.
Does this bike have the urethane in the swing arm, or is that the street
that's
model?
That's the X. Okay. RL. So this is basically an R. The downside of this bike, it doesn't have six gear. We did go up one tooth on the rear. Jamie got the ECU for us so that it runs amazing. The biggest thing is the suspension from AHM is really good. And I've ridden the bike a bunch. I don't feel like I would feel comfortable at all on the track with it. I'd still rather be on the 250 or 350 on the track. But as far as the hill tracks this winter and in the desert, totally fine. Even on the Hesperia up in our trails systems, it was really good there. We put hand guards on, wraparounds, because it's going up to Utah.
Oh, nice.
Next week. Yeah. So it's up for, we're going to do some Idaho trips, all kinds of secret riding trips.
Yeah. So I got three questions.
One,
is this a bike you would keep long term, longer than what is available to you?
Yes, we would buy it, but unfortunately, this one's going to have too many hours when we're done.
Okay. Okay. Trail bikes, is this your favorite Honda you've ever had, and how does it match up to a 350 KTM trail bike?
Yeah, I think that it's the best Honda we've ever had. I made a video on my Instagram about how it's the best overall Honda. I really do think that. So I think it's if you're a guy and you're a Honda guy, like you love Hondas, I get an RX, and you like track and trail and want one bike, that's it for sure. And then compared to a 350, I think that I prefer in a lot of ways the 450 because I don't want to say I can be lazier, but I can
he be. He can be lazier.
But I can be lazier, but because I'm a lot of times I'm cutting in fresh trail and I can just go to this huge, because Jay's coming downhill and I'll cut in something and I'll come to the bottom and I'll just be at a dead stop. And I'm like, all right, and just dump the clutch and just in second gear and just pin it wide open and it makes it. And so it's just, I don't think I'd be able to do that as much.
He did some hill climbs that there's no way. I think he does that same hill climb on a 350.
Yeah.
So it's just that extra 100 cc's is
enough. Can you put lights on this bike?
No.
No, so that you can't
walk. I think that's going to be one of our questions. I think one of our questions this week
is... How does that happen? I always think about that.
Right. Yeah. But we get a lot of questions that guys ask about putting headlights onto RXs or XCFs. Just give up those dreams. If you want headlights, buy an EXC or
the
dual sport version. Yeah,
yeah.
Buy the dual sport version. So we'll talk about that later. But the Stator, these bikes, like behind Spencer, is a motocross bike with a few things with the 18-inch rear wheel. We added the fan. We made a fan work on that thing, mm-hmm. which is really cool. ICW helped us with some mounts. And then we shot that with Chris Kiefer with Racer X. And you can go to our website to check out that full bike. So,
do you think it'd be a benefit to put a sixth gear in it?
Oh, it would be awesome for connecting trails. So if they had a six gear version, I just think Japan guys are not going to, even KTM, only the 350 XCF comes with six speeds, which is cool for us, right?
Yeah.
For some reason, they don't have it in the 450. You can't get a 450 XCF with six speeds.
Yeah.
Now. So we prefer having that six to be able to go connect the road. Because you get off a trail, then you're going to ride 5 miles of asphalt or dirt road or whatever to get to the next section. It's nice just to be able to put it in six and lug it. So
there you go.
Yeah, I like it. All right, so I'm excited about this show. Spencer and Donnie have been wanking about how long the shows have been. So if I get cut off during the show, it's because of them. So
they're blaming us automatically.
Yes, I'm already gonna, because they're like, we're gonna control the questions
that comes off the screen and pulls his neck.
So I got like 15 or 16 questions over there, or 17, and they're like, well, we control it all. But anyway, before we get started on questions, I have a couple feel-good stories. So you might want to, you know, dab your eyes.
You should have told me, I would have gotten a tissue.
Right. All right. So I love a lot of the comments we get guys writing this. And one of the coolest things I like to get is guys that are getting back into moto or moto for the first time. And this is Justin L. from Southern California. He says, Dirt Bike TV is amazing. So we already know he's pretty smart, right? To say the least, kept me from busting my knuckles on tire changes. Been riding for almost 2 years. He says he's 44 years old. So he got into it pretty late. Never had an opportunity to ride before in life, so I'm super stoked on moto and the whole community. My two daughters, 10 and 16, aren't interested in riding dirt bikes yet, but I love watching MX and Supercross with him, and they have fun in the fantasy Supercross and all that. Thanks again for the great videos and tips, and I thought this was awesome. And I've had a few people like this who've gotten into moto after 40. The next thing is he has two daughters. He still has them, right? And I had two daughters first as well. And one thing I'll say is there's plenty of girls that ride and enjoy it. That's totally fine. But if your girls are not into it, I guess that goes for your boys too, right?
Yeah.
But for most boys, if your dad's into it, they're going to usually want to follow along. But when the girls, I don't push them. And if they like it, they're going to do it. And I've had this talk with a few other guys. The girls like it. And then after a while, if they want to go play soccer or do cheer or dance or whatever it is they want to do instead, support them in that. They would rather, a lot of times I notice with the girls, and I might get a lot of flack for this, but they just want to spend time with dad. So if their only way to spend time with dad is moto, then maybe they'll do that. But if they know that dad's going to go to soccer with them, then they'll probably do that. And I did coach a few years of girls soccer too. I wasn't very good at it.
But. How was he as a coach?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
I mean, he's good, but at the end of the day.
A lot of yelling, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I wore out my voice. Okay, then the next one.
That would have been terrible.
We got another one from a guy named Scott W. Just getting back into riding after 20 years off. Okay, so this is the first problem. You shouldn't have let those 20 years happen. So the first thing I tell these guys is don't let it happen again, and you're fine. He's got a KTM 300, XC. I've changed way too many tires sitting on a milk crate. I would love a set of tire changing plans. So as you know, we have the tire stand plans for those that don't have them yet. Just email us contacts in the description below in this video, or you go to our website, Linktree, all that kind of stuff. And you can write us for the description and get the drawings to make your own tire stand if you got a buddy that can help you weld, all that kind of stuff. So remember that. Also use our links when you're we have links for discount codes, for gear, for different things. If you're shopping at Rocky Mountain, all those kind of things, you can use those as well. So, and we have lots of really good videos on our YouTube channel. If you haven't caught, yeah, we got some great videos up there to catch. And the biggest one is that 125 tips. That thing's still, it's like almost 300,000 views. Everybody's really liking that one. It's a really cool one. It's like 40 minutes long with lots of tips. We're gonna do a part two of that with like 50 or 60 more tips that I've thought of since then. Which is hard to believe, right?
Wow.
All right, so let's get into some questions now.
First question, all right, from Neil E. Hey Jay, I have another question for you. I have a 23 FX 350, so the Husky version. and went to bleed the left fork, and all the air came out of the fork plus a tiny bit of oil. I'm new to the air fork and I'm not sure what happened here. Any thoughts? Thank you.
Okay, so first thing I thought of was that his bike wasn't fully off the ground. And so I rode him, and sure enough, he was on a stand, but it was barely on a stand. So when you bleed your forks, the air from your forks, which is important, make sure the bike is on the stand. There can be no pressure on it. If it's pressure, it will push oil out. So simple solution, just make sure it's on a stand.
The fork has to be bottomed out.
Yes.
Topped out, I mean, topped all the way extended.
And we'll do it, and when we don't have a stand sometimes, Spencer and I will do it, and I'll lean the bike over on the kickstand and even lift up while he does it. We've done that too to bleed forks as well. So that's an easy way to do it.
All right.
Well, with two people anyway.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. All right, SoCal Rider has a question. Any recommendations on the best dirt bike tie downs, cam versus ratchet strap?
Okay, so we didn't get to this question last show, so I like this style tie down. Works Connection has these that they've sourced out. They're really nice. What I like, the few things I like about these, the bottom one has a little latch here, like that, which is really cool. And then up here, you have a soft strap, so you can go like this and loop it in. And we have used these to get myself unstuck. We put a couple of these together and towed out, so they're pretty strong. We've looped them together, and it's been pretty amazing. So I really like this style tie down. And for dirt bikes, this is totally sufficient. Now, if you're on a hitch one, that's a little bit more sketchy. I would probably recommend having at least some type of ratcheting tie down that would never give. But these tie downs, I've never had a problem with these things giving. If you're in a tough situation where it's a tough angle, you can, once you've cinched it down, you can loop it together to lock it in place with a little knot, so to speak, just a simple like this. You just pull it through, just like that, and that'll keep it from ever pulling through. But we don't even do that on these because we don't need to. But if it was on a weird angle, I would. One of the downsides, and this ratcheting tie down is a good quality one I've had for, since before Spencer was born, way before.
Oh, that thing's old.
Old. Now, one of the downsides of these is it is more of a hassle to get them to click in and get in place. But this mechanism right here will end up rubbing on your triple clamps or something. It's just kind of not desirable. So that's one reason I don't like to use these if I don't have to. But ratcheting ones like this are really good for certain conditions. If I did have one on a hitch hauler, maybe I might be more concerned about it and want to have it on there. But for the most part, these tie downs are totally sufficient. Good quality tie down like that works great. And we'll use it with this, with the soft rubber piece right here, or with that soft strap. So
my buddy had a bike tied down in the back of his truck. This is the nice thing about having a van, right?
Yeah.
In the back of the truck, and he went through like a ditch at an angle, and the truck rocked from side to side. It leaned to the inside, unhooked, and flipped all the way out of the truck.
Whoa. Yeah. I think I've seen videos of similar stuff happening like that.
I know somebody that did it.
That's what I'm saying. It's like I've never heard of somebody personally, so that's crazy. Yeah. All right, next question from John L. It says, "Hey Jay, I love watching all things Dirt Bike TV. I've learned a ton from you. Just curious where this is in Utah. Looks amazing. Would love to ride there with my kids someday. Thanks from a Midwestern rider."
Okay. I'm 90% sure that question was about Caneville, Swing Arm City.
Yeah.
But basically, I'm going to give you a tip, is that all of our, anywhere we ride Utah is on a website called dirtbikeutah.net. And a really cool guy named Dave runs this site, really for not much of a gain, just doing it to better humanity and dirt bike community. So really cool. Thanks, Dave, for doing that. So that website's really cool. And in his website, he does have links to his, what's it called?
Thumper Jockey? You're talking about his lights?
Yeah. Throttle Jockey?
Yeah, Throttle Jockey. Thumper Jockey?
Thumper Top?
Thumper Jockey. No, that's something else. But yeah, Throttle Jockey.
Throttle Jockey is the graphics and stuff.
Yeah. Hold on.
You'll look it up. He has a link to his lighting company that makes lights for dirt bikes or helmet lights as well. He has some good things there. So all of our riding tips, any of our riding areas.
That's right. Thumper Jockey.
Thumper Jockey. There we go.
It's a combination of the two.
Of the two. Throttle Jockey and then Thumper Talk. We got it. Thumper Jockey.
And so go to that website, dirtbikeutah.net, and you can learn all about, there's desert and mountain things. Now, I get guys writing me from out of state about riding in Utah or places like this, and they forget that they just want to come, like, they're like, "We're going to come in August and go ride Moab." And I'm like, dude, Okay, good on you if you think that's a good idea, but that's really difficult. So
bring some hydration packs.
So we don't ride in those areas past like maybe the 1st of May, and then we come back in October, 1st of October. We take, so you have to look and pay attention to those. And if you email us, I'd give you some tips on what times of year for certain places. And then also, with depending upon the snow, last year it was after 4th of July before the mountain stuff was really passable, right?
It was like July, like 20th, that so, most of the trails were cleared.
So this year, it should be a few weeks earlier, if all goes well.
Hey, we need an open call. Dirt Bike TV Trail Ride. Everybody come and join.
Right. We talked about that a few times.
We've talked about this.
But yeah. So we've talked about throwing it out there. Problems, I don't plan ahead a lot. Like, it's no, usually just a week.
No. You've
been on some rides.
And where you've called me, you're like, hey, Tuesday we're going, and it's up. Monday.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it would be like three or 4 days.
It'd be like Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday.
It'd be like Saturday.
Saturday.
Yeah. So I also have a I'm not as patient with taking huge groups.
Yeah, he does not.
But if you're in Utah and then you hit me up or DM me about riding, I will take you and some people and we'll go ride.
Like one other, two people.
Yeah.
Because I think a group of five almost always a group of five is like
pushing it
pretty good. I think that's the end of the limit.
I think that's the limit for me.
Spencer thinks two's the best size.
Two's good. No. Me and Jay.
Hey, well, okay.
or one other.
When we went in GL and then
that
Jim,
was good.
And that was fine.
That was fine. Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, but we're all good riders.
We got to that one area where then there was more support, where three or four guys all kind of wanted to wuss out on the Razorbacks. So they had
that
more
wasn't
support.
Me. You keep adding me in there, and that wasn't me. Yeah. Tell him.
It was 2.5.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go with the half.
It was a half.
I think I was just being lazy.
I think it was a long day that day before.
I think I was being lazy.
Yeah. All right. So KCG says, "Hey Jay, thanks for the content you put out. I was curious if you have any ideas on how to dampen vibration on a 24 Gas 65. It literally stings my son's hands numb. He has a 23, and it's great." Normal two-stroke vibration. The bike runs really good, so I haven't played with jetting yet. Didn't know if I should richen the pilot up, if that would help. Just checking to see if you've come across things like this. Thanks.
So I checked into this a little bit. I don't have a 65. Gratefully, I don't have a kid in that age group. So very stoked about that, to have no 50s, 60s, or any of that, because it is more hassle for you guys that are doing it. I commend you. But when you have something like that, jetting's not going to fix vibration. And so what I told him, hey, that sounds like a crank issue. And I did check around, and there was some, sounds like there could potentially be some crank issues. So he was actually taking it back to his dealer because the bike was pretty new. So we'll hopefully that'll circle back and he'll get taken care of. But if you have something like that on a brand new bike, and I had another guy ask on something on a brand new bike the other day, and after some stuff back and forth, I found out he only had a few hours in the bike, so he's going to take it back.
What's retail on one of those 65s?
I don't even know, but too much. Like, I think
they're
like $5,000.
$5,000, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, wow.
As far as vibration with the gas four strokes, we have switched most of our gas that we've had to the black billet clamps that are rubber mounted instead of solid mounted threaded.
Well, yeah.
To help with vibration.
I think cast clamps would be awesome. The problem with cast clamps is on the KTM bikes is they come solid mounted for the bars. So I wish there was a cast clamp that was rubber mounted.
That'd be nice.
Ideally for on the KTM
bikes. I'm putting those other clamps on mine. Yeah. We're going to talk about that.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I mean.
All right. Next.
Yeah, I'll do it. So John C wants to know, hey Jay, I was just wondering what foot pegs were used on your 90s CR250 builds. I'm having trouble finding ones and wasn't sure what's are compatible.
Okay, so this was really easy. IMS still makes some really nice ones. It's a, what do they call that?
Superstock?
Superstock.
Yeah.
I think that's what they called it.
Yeah, Superstock.
And they look really nice. They're just a really simple looking peg. We'll have some pictures on the screen for those guys here. And it's still available right from IMS or from Rocky Mountain. And it fits those mid-90s.
Are those CRs. Stainless? Are those their stainless?
It's more like a cast steel.
A cast steel.
Of some sort. And they look kind of sandblasted. And they look, honestly, kind of Thai looking. But they're not Thai.
Oh, nice.
But they're, because they're only like 100, 110 bucks or so.
Because how much can Thai pegs become?
Yeah, that would be 250 to 300. Yeah. So
I think they're the same ones on my 450. I think we got some IMS ones on my 450 build.
Oh, those are good.
Yeah, they're great.
So they've been nice. Yeah, that's right. So anyway, so yeah, it's nice. And then our older CR builds, which we'll have a picture of one right here on those bikes. We're finishing a video. We're gonna have a video on that soon. And there's a, it's amazing how much stuff's available. The little hiccups I had on parts that weren't available was not too bad.
So, was it just OEM stuff, basically?
OEM stuff. Yeah. You know, air boots, that was a tough one. Air boxes, you know, some of that kind of stuff you're going to, you know, fight to find. But they have, everything else is not too bad on eBay. Some guys are kind of ripping guys a bit, but you can get through it. It's not too bad.
Hey, I was thinking when you were talking about color changing those bikes, did you think about Cerakoting those air boxes?
We did. The black ones we did.
You did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the white ones we just blasted. The ones that were came black, we did Cerakote those black through Sano.
Oh, yeah.
And they came out really nice. Okay. What I was worried about on the white ones, if we Cerakoted them black, is that they would, if anybody wore on them.
Oh,
I
right.
don't think anyone's really going to ride these bikes for real. So we'll see.
All right. Brett D. said, "Hi, Jay. Ended up putting a deposit on a 2024 YZ250. Also bought an FMF slip-on and Twinner Powerflow kit. I saw your video of you running Twisted Development's new dual injector kit. Can you please tell me what's the overall horsepower and torque with the dual injector kit, or what the increase is?"
Okay, so one of the problems, and this is a tough dilemma for Jamie at Twisted, is that 250F mods cost a lot of money for a small gain. And 250F mods are like a little bit of mod, you know, it's $1,000 a horsepower. Who knows what that ratio is, right? Something crazy. So he doesn't publish numbers typically, because guys will then take it to their local guy and it didn't match that or this match this. I can assure you on his dyno, it gave this much of an improvement, and it's good. So with that dual injector and that Yamaha 250, it just feels way more connected, and it just gives you a really good snap on the bike. Your hand feels connected to the rear wheel. I don't know if the difference is as big of a difference as it was on the older bike, on the 23 and older Yamaha 250F, where it was more of a difference. But it is a good difference, and probably the first thing I would do if you did one, because you get the Vortex and you have it mapped from Jamie, and that would probably be the one I would probably do first, and then you can do your motor work later if you're going to rebuild the top end or anything.
Where does that dual injector help the most? Is it bottom, mid?
I think it's
around?
Bottom to mid, but it's all over. But that bottom to mid, and it's like it's that instant snap. And in a 250F, you want that instant bottom power, because that's where it's kind of doesn't have that torque, right? So it picks up some torque, and that snap. You know, when you grab that throttle, it just feels like that rear wheel is pulling right instantly.
Is this something that's AMA legal? Race guys run it?
Oh, they can. Yeah, most of it's legal in any mod class or the pro class.
Yeah, in the pro class.
Most of them have some type of, and I'm learning that many of the teams on other, even on other brands of bikes other than the Yamaha, are running some type of dual injector setup.
Oh, really?
On most of the 250s out there. So,
wow, interesting.
You know, the Cowie comes with its stock, but then there's some bikes that don't, and even some of those now have dual injectors set up of some sort going on.
Wow. All right, Brian P., can you recommend a place? I don't know if you can do this or not. Can you recommend a place that repairs radiators? Thanks for your time.
That's an easy one. Brett at ICW, he's in North Carolina. It's not cheap. He does repair them. So you want to, and with him, you could email him photos and he could give you an estimate of what it's going to be. But his main business is setting up and strengthening radiators for race teams and stuff, and maybe even rerouting or adding capacity, those types of specialty race items. So it's difficult with how, and I do prefer fixing stock radiators over buying some Amazon, you know, China ones or whatever, right? Yeah. They don't, nothing ever fits the same. Those types of issues are tough. So I do prefer, you have to weigh it out how good a deal you can get on your stock radiators. Some brands are more expensive than others. Some of them are really expensive, some aren't too bad. So, but then you have to factor in, if he repairs it, he's gonna strengthen it at the same time, so it won't be as apt to do it. Or if you buy a brand new one, and maybe it's a little bit more, but then it's still not strengthened yet. So you'll probably end up bending that brand new one again. So
his turnaround time's impressive too.
Yeah,
honestly,
right away.
Quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Usually a couple days in his
shop. I'm not kidding. You think it'd be a 2 month process?
No, he's real fast at it. Just knocks him out.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, Mike T says he got his son a 24 YZ250F, and the front brake is very soft. He's asking, what's the best solution for the brake to make it feel better? It pulls all the way to the bar when he pulls it in. I'm going to add a steel braided line, and I've seen some other mods that can be done. I'm also changing the front floating rotor out. He doesn't like the feel of that either. Thank you.
Yeah, so a solid rotor is what he's talking about. Getting a solid rotor so it doesn't have that little give feel of the... And all the KTMs, like the oversized we have, does have that little floater from Tusk, but we don't ever notice any problem.
I don't notice it.
The stock Yamaha, for some reason, the last couple years, I don't know why, it's not as good as it used to be. It just feels more mushy. I was trying to think, is the line not as good a quality of line? And whether it's materials or whatever, over the last few years, I don't know. But on R24, we switched to a Galfer steel braided line and an oversized front rotor, and it feels like amazing. Like, it feels like it should stock with just that. So the steel braided line is the biggest improvement. I feel like that's going to help. Adding a larger rotor is going to give you more stopping power, but that's not going to necessarily change any of the feel in the lever. So I think the steel braided line is the biggest improvement you can do.
Yeah,
on that.
It's time for a product spotlight.
Product spotlight. Yeah. Are you sure you're ripping us on questions?
We are at 25-ish minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. Klotz R50. For those two-stroke guys out there that are still smelling the two-strokeness, let's talk about Klotz R50. It's a really good, there's some real technical reasons of their flash point and this and that of Klotz, why it's a really good oil. But we've been running this synthetic lubricant for our two-strokes for 25 years range or more. And one of the things I like about it is it's not a real dirty oil. Some guys, and they do have a castor type oil that smells amazing, a bean oil, benzoil. And it smells amazing, and kind of like there's some other brands out there, I won't say, but they're really dirty and they clog up the power valves. This is a pretty clean oil and gives really good lubrication. So one of the things that's gonna help you as far as a two-stroke oil is saving your lower end crank and rod bearings. To save those, you want a really good oil, and that really helps. I get a lot of questions on mixing ratios. I'll give you some ideas on ratios. We run 50-1 for our trail bikes, our big trail bikes, like our 250, 300 cc trail bikes. We'll run 50-1 in that range. We'll run 40-1 on a 250 two-stroke motocross bike, then 32-1 on a 125 MX bike. 32-1. And then 20-1 on a small 65 or 85, 20-1. They need that much additional lubrication. Guys will freak out and they'll say, well, I'm oozing out the end of the silencer. Well, that's part of the dilemma. And the biggest way to stop oozing out the silencer is to go faster. You know, that's what you have to use up that oil. And so if a guy is slower, taking less oil out of there is only going to make your bottom end not last as long. And you can, so if a guy's slower, he's going slower, you can go a little bit leaner on the jetting to help with that, and then go richer as he gets faster. So that can hopefully help.
So it sounds like a skill issue then.
Yeah. So
yeah. At least
a throttle issue.
A throttle right? issue.
Yeah.
So, and it is normal to have some, especially on a trail two-stroke bike, there's no way you can ever clean up that ooze enough. If you jet that out, it's not gonna run any good, or run less oil, it's not gonna run any good. So you're gonna want to have, if you have a little bit of ooze coming out the tailpipe, it's totally fine, as long as you're not fouling plugs and all that.
What causes a bike to be loaded up? You know, when you're revving it and warming it up, and then when you start revving it out, is that fuel stuck in the bottom end?
It could be a clump of, you know, you got pre-mix, you got oil just sitting in there, maybe it's set in there and it starts to load up on that initial fire up, right? It's been sitting with too much oil. And because if you look at our two-stroke oil in the bottom of the bowl, or coming out those hoses, that two-stroke oil will kind of always be, will set there. So, you know, so that's why it can be a little dangerous to, when we start them, we get that choke off straight away. You know, you don't want that choke on any longer. Just turn that choke off as soon as you start it and just kind of, you know, rev it up and try to get it to open up as soon as you get to a reasonable time there, you know, and you can start revving it up and let it clear out.
Yeah. This is from Ali. He's asking a question on new EXC bikes. Says, "Hey Jay, how often do top ends need to be changed on these bikes? There are conflicting information out there, especially on the newer bikes versus the older ones. The 2024 EXCF manual says to take the engine apart at 3,700 miles." And then he says, in parentheses, ridiculous. Would appreciate if you should shine some light on this topic. P.S. You can always use any of my questions on that Moto Show.
Well, that's nice.
There you go.
Okay. Well, I would say that that's probably very conservative. And we go by hours more than miles, just because that's more relative to us. And then with most bikes, the hours are probably more important, how much hours you're putting on it. But on a dual sport, a big 500 EXC dual sport, we have guys no problem doing over 200 hours. And so I would say between 200 and 300 hours, you'd want to look at it. And in that range, depending upon your situation, if it starts to use oil, if it becomes hard to start because the valves are out of clearance, which is very tough, on a KTM unless it sucks dirt. So if on a KTM, if you're changing the oil regularly and not sucking dirt, they're going to go 200 to 300 hours, no problem. If not, much longer. We have guys putting 300 to 400 hours on a 500 EXC stock components and no problem if they take good care of it. So I would not stress about that at all on those kind of intervals. And yeah, just take good care of it and you're going to be good.
Especially not on a 500, man. No. Those things just...
yeah.
They're great.
Anyway. John O. I don't think this is Johnny O.
Nah.
Johnny, you think Johnny O's asking
questions?
No, okay. John O, I see you're running a dual sport tire for trail riding. Can you please tell me what tire that is? Thank you.
Okay, so on, we run that Trials tire. It's a TL01, the new one. We like that Trials tire on the trail. It's amazing. And there's also the D803 Dunlop. They're still out there. I'm not sure how much longer that one's going to be around. That one works really well as well. The TL01 is street legal.
No.
Nope. Spencer corrected me. K950 is the street legal version, and it's not, the percentage that it's not as good off-road is very small, right? It's hard to notice, especially on a big bike. I would have no problem running a K950 if I was going to be doing asphalt and dirt roads and so forth.
Yeah.
And it, the durability is amazing on that K950. The TL01 probably performs just a bit better. But again, it's not street legal. But so that gives you some things to look at on the Dunlop side of things with those, some really good tire choices. So real happy with those on the trail. The only place those tires, those Trials type tires, don't do well is on snow, ice, because they'll pack up. Okay, so we're heading into summer for most people, so we're fine on that. And deep sand, like sand dunes. But regular sand, like on the trail, it's fine. Just regular, say, sand in between. Now, but if you're gonna go into sand, deep sand on, and some sand dune stuff, you can get through it. So if it's only a small amount, you're fine. People freak out. Or deep slimy mud, like deep mud. And you're gonna be in deep mud a lot. If you're only in it for a little bit, it's fine as well. So it'll get you through there. What are your thoughts on the Trials tire, Spence?
Yeah, I think the K950, if I had like one tire for trail riding, it'd be, because I use a lot of roads sometimes on when I'm trying to do big connecting loops. I'll have some dirt road and some just mountain roads that are paved. And it's nice to have a tire that's street legal, because then I don't have to worry about smoking a tire because it's really durable.
Yeah.
And I don't notice any drastic difference. I think it performs just as well as a knobby that's, you know, a harder compound. So
how long will that tire last you guys?
You can get a whole summer out.
We got like 200 miles or something out of one. And then that was like a lot of road. And I think one we
it
got
it still
like,
looked really good.
It still looked really yeah. good. That when so, we changed it anyways, just because we're doing the bike. But
so the durability is great. I don't know. I think it'd be hard to, you know, you can get a long time yeah. out of them. You know, mm-hmm. and they just grip. And we run like 8 to 9 PSI in them on most trail conditions. You know, and if you're not hammering, you're not going to get a flat. Like if you're not, you know, going 50 miles an hour into rocks, you're fine. So
that's a lot of things people don't think about is actually taking care of their tire on the trail.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, avoiding that kind of stuff and hammering things and sharp rock and whatever else.
So that's, and I'll be running a Trials tire most of the summer on most of our trails, mm-hmm. or an Enduro Cross gummy tire. But for the most part, I'll run a Trials tire most of the summer.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. AG has a question about our Rocky Mountain link. So I'll kind of read out.
I know his question. So I'll just summarize it.
So,
yeah. He had his question about our Rocky Mountain link, that if he clicked on it from our website or from the description in this video or anything like that, how can he tell that we get credit? As long as you click on it, you're fine. It has a little save thing in there, so you're fine. So don't stress it. And he's a good follower of ours. Yep. He writes questions often. So don't stress on it. As long as you click on our link, it'll remember you for like a week or two. But if you just remember, anytime you're gonna order, just click on our link first and it works. So that's a great question from him. He just wanted to make sure he was supporting us, and so we appreciate it. AG, thanks, man.
Yep. Oh man, I should click through that.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. All right, Chris E. I was thinking about adding a light onto my 2023 350 oh, yeah. XCF for desert riding and later in the day,
yeah.
dusting conditions.
Yeah.
I have some really powerful rigid lights that I took off my old CRF 230, but I heard the KTM stators are weaker. I thought it just got the power from the battery, but some say it takes it from the stator as well. What light would you recommend? I see you love the 350 XCF. A lot, and you'd probably know a bit about it. Thanks for the help.
Okay, so he's right. I do love the 350 XCF a lot, but We're just not planning on riding past dark with it. So we have EXE. I have a 450 and a 350 EXE that we would ride if we're going to go on a dual sport ride. But for our trail rides, I'm spoiled and have that 350 XCF. Just know we're going to be done by dark. And most of our summer rides, it's not a problem at all. We start off early. We're done by 3 or 4. Time for dinner.
Yeah. I remember one bike. We put a Baja Designs light that was mounted to the bars. And there was a battery pack behind the front number plate.
Oh, yeah.
As a 350. As an emergency. It was a 350 XCF. And so it was like an emergency thing that if I ever needed the light, it was on the bars and there's a battery pack behind the light and it would just kill the battery pack. And then, so if you want to do something like that for emergencies, like if what he's saying, then you could do something like that and you want to keep your XCF.
The other option is you have to get an upgraded stator. So that's before you even talk about lights and what lights are best. Companies like Moto Minded could give you some help, or Taco Moto. Those are companies that can guide you in the right direction as far as where to get a stator. I think Trail Tech might have stators for those now. And it's not just KTM. This is Honda and Kawasaki and Yamaha. All their bikes, their XCF, which is to be the RX or the FX, any of those bikes, they don't have a strong enough stator stock because it's the motocross version. So we talked about that earlier. So if you want to put a headlight on a bike, you should pay attention. If you're going to buy a bike, find that out before you buy a bike. So I get a lot of guys asking this question when it's too late. They've already bought the bike. So when you're shopping for bikes, make sure what you're really desiring and what you're after, so we can go over the pros and cons of that.
These stators on these, like that off-road bike, the XCF and the SXF, they barely charge the battery.
Right.
I mean, it's like at a trickle charge.
And we had a fan, and we're careful about how much we eat up the fan. So if we get into really tough conditions where the fan's kicking on a bunch, we'll take a break and go, okay, we gotta rest a bit here.
We've unplugged the fan before.
We've unplugged them before to get out of a section to go, okay, it's worth it running hot to get out of here. But for the most part, if we take a break, I get physically better because it's usually me that's causing the problem, not Spencer. So if I can get calmed down, I can get out of the section. Or if we have a bike that's having a little bit hotter, then I'll put Spencer on that bike. And he'll ride it out of the section, and I'll get on the other bike and get it hot by the time we get out, and then we can switch flip-flop bikes because he keeps it cooler on the way out. So we have a system, but that can be tough. So
it's nice to have a Spencer around,
right? Right. Oh, right. a bike caddy.
Yeah,
the moving the bikes around. Mark H has a question on the new YZ250F. Says, "Hey Jay, sorry for bothering you again. LOL. I know you're fine with it, right?" So he went for a pro circuit full exhaust with a Vortex ECU, and he's looking at the different ECU map settings. He says, "I only see Yoshi and FMF. Which setting would you recommend I use?"
Okay, so he's talking about the stock tuner app from GYTR, and it's okay. It's okay to run any, to get a baseline, you could run any of those suggested maps for any of the aftermarket exhaust. They're going to be very close. So I wouldn't stress too much about having the exact one for your exhaust if you're going to be using the stock tuner. So using the stock tuner that way, that'll be pretty easy. And then if you go to a Vortex or have somebody like Jamie map your stock one, then he would factor that in. So hopefully that helps you out. But that the Yamaha tuner is a lot better than a lot of others that are out there.
It actually works.
It actually works and connects. You know,
so it connects to your phone.
But, like, I haven't used one. Are they all just?
It's not as good as just adding a Vortex.
That's not my point.
Right.
It's like,
no, so it's very small. And then all the videos and stuff, they show these guys at the track on their phone and they're smiling as they work. That's my first giveaway, that they're smiling at the track while other people are riding on the track that's all prepped.
Yeah.
And they're over there tuning. Okay. Anybody that's smiling, it's a fake deal. You know, when they're looking at their phone and they're smiling as they're putting in numbers, I'm going to go test this. No, you want to go moto and then go home and, you know, go wash your bike and get to.
Do you know, I even gas up at home. I don't even go gas up at the track.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I know that.
You unload it and you maybe bleed the forks. That's probably the only thing.
I see guys, like they're unloading it. They're setting tire pressure.
Tire pressure.
No,
oh,
no. That's all done before we go.
No, I did it. Yeah.
Gassed up. We throw them out. We may lube the chain and we get geared up. We do.
I lube my chain here.
Right.
I do everything before it goes in the van.
We try to be quick, you know. And so I don't want to be at the track tuning. So that's the advantage of getting an ECU from your engine builder, is that it's good to go 90% of the time, you don't have to do anything. You have two different switches. You go, oh, I like this one with less engine braking, more engine braking, and call it good and just ride and enjoy. Because as all of us say, all these current four strokes right now, they're all faster than we can ride, you know.
Yeah. My 350s are faster than I can ride.
Right. So that's pretty typical.
Yeah.
All right, what do we got next?
No.
CD time.
Oh,
CD
you're cutting time. Us off. See,
it's 40 minutes.
I think we only went through like half the questions.
No, we got two pages of questions.
All right, so
there's only four
we've
left.
We've done 40 minutes.
All right, so these guys, this is tough, but you see what I have to work with. I get what I pay for.
If he edited this show, he would have a totally different outlook.
10 minutes would be over.
He'd be like,
Here's our CD from 1980, and I wasn't very old, but this was one of the first CDs, or it wasn't even a CD then. I heard it on 8-track for the first time.
Yeah.
8-track.
Yeah.
And over, and it would just be playing this thing. Donnie, what can you tell me? I know this is one of your favorites.
So this is probably my favorite all-time album right here, and it's easy to pick, right? It's 25 million other people's favorite album as well. So it's sold over 25 million in the United States alone.
That's crazy.
And it's funny, it didn't sell too big worldwide, so it was only a couple million more worldwide, but here in the United States, it's the fourth best-selling album of all time.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I asked Donnie, I was guessing at the rest, but it was like, I guessed Thriller, of course.
Yeah, that's like, pretty, I don't say easy, but I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
And then,
that was good, right?
Yeah.
You like that?
Yeah.
You should see my moonwalk.
Yeah.
All right.
Honestly, that Thriller video was out of this world.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing. Anyway.
And he always had good guitarist too.
Yeah.
He did. He was into that that quite a bit. But let's go over the songs. Hell's Bells, Shoot to Thrill. What would you do for money? Honey, giving the dog a bone. Let me put my love into you. Now, some of these might have a little bit of innuendos there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Back in Black.
Okay.
Oh, You Shook Me All Night Long.
Have a Drink on Me.
Yeah.
Shake a Leg.
And then
Rock and Roll. Every song, 10 songs, not a throwaway in there, really.
No.
Most albums, it's like 2 to 4 max. But and you just still like the rest of the stuff. But this is one of the few albums. Now, there are albums that came out later. They would have 2 to 4 songs, right?
Yeah.
Typically, the ones that came up. Now, there's some interesting things about this song. Even that song, that Have a Drink on Me, do you know what that one's about?
It's a salute to Bon Scott.
Yeah, so yeah. Bon Scott was there. This was an already pretty successful group.
They had 6 albums before this.
Mm-hmm. 6 albums.
6 albums.
And their early stuff, they're from Australia.
Yeah.
And they had pretty decent success in the hard rock world. And you know how they were good. Now, I don't want to make light of the fact that Bon Scott died. But he did die the rock and roll way, right?
Yep.
And the rock and roll way is that you drown on your bark.
Alcohol poisoning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They say alcohol poisoning, but you choke on
Yeah. It's all what you're saying. Yeah.
So it's not a pleasant, I don't know. I mean, he probably wasn't cognizant to know how bad of a way it was to go, right?
Yeah.
But he was the
second singer.
Right. I read about that a while back, that the first singer only Chris did one song.
Chris Davis.
He only did one song.
Yeah.
And they never really produced it. So they kicked him out. Like they went this other way, but he only did like one song, and then Bon Scott did those albums, and then this.
Now here's what's interesting to me is this album came out in 1980, and Bon Scott died in 1980. They had already wrote most of this album before he died.
Yes. So then they probably added that. They added,
this was the first album with Brian Johnson.
I don't know if I realized, he
died in 1980 and that came out in 1980.
So I'll have to look at if he helped on many of those songs.
Right. You'll have to see if he's a co-writer.
You'll have to look at that. But anyway, for those that are new to this rock and roll thing, Back in Black. I probably don't need to tell very many people, but that's just a given. Donnie's been waiting for me to bring this one over.
But I love others like TNT and High Voltage.
Yeah.
Amazing albums, Razor's Edge and stuff got a little too,
because they always had the Thunderstruck, they had the anthem, I'll call it, right?
Yeah,
they always had the one good rock anthem that
was Reed's anthem, right?
Yeah,
Thunderstruck, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Reed's anthem when he came out,
it
in
was,
Supercross.
Yeah. So anyway, so great album to check out. What else we got? What do you got for me to close out, Don?
Yeah.
Or you want to just be over? We have time for your questions.
It's time for him. Yeah, time for Donnie.
Yeah, it's time for me, man. It's some me time.
All right.
Well, so really, I want to know kind of like, what is your funnest part of the day? Like, besides working on the bikes and riding, what else in the industry is kind of your funnest part of this whole deal? I know it excludes two big things.
Yeah. So for me, I guess I really enjoy watching the races. Yeah. I still enjoy watching races. So if I have the right day to where, like a perfect day, for we ride dirt bikes, work on some dirt bikes, don't have too much go wrong, maybe just enough to where I feel like I accomplished something, but nothing terrible. No one else broke something, but that I can fix it pretty quick. We have a lot of parts at the house and stuff, so we can usually fix everything. So we have good that, and then get to watch some good racing. That's always fun. So
what about off-season stuff? Will you watch other stuff during the off-season?
Not a ton. I do watch football, but that's somewhat limited because that's just a time killer until there's more motocross on.
Well, and I saw football. You know, I saw that was all rigged.
Right. So, and then when the magazine or the story comes out online, that's kind of cool, you know. And I just got the new issue of Dirt Bike Magazine. We have our CRs in there. I should have brought that. Yeah. That would have been cool to show. Maybe I'll bring that next time. But our CR 250s in there and the new issue of Dirt Bike, that's kind of cool, you know, to see. Or if you get the cover, I've had a few on the cover of Motocross Action. We had a while back.
Wow, how many magazines do you think your projects have been in? You can't even count.
Just hundreds. And one of the coolest things about this last Motocross Action that we were on the cover with the RM was in the back of the magazine, they had this little segment called 20 Years Ago. And 20 years ago, the same issue, we were on the cover. I don't think they caught it, you know, who it was. Because it's the production people are the ones that put that together, just find a cover from 20 years ago. So with Motocross Action, it was 20 years apart, I had the cover on there. So it was kind of cool. You know, pretty rad, right?
Your first cover you ever got?
Would have been a quad magazine with Dirt Wheels. We did a quad, and it was on there. So like in 91.
Yeah, so that's kind of like a problem, right? Because you're embarrassed, but you were still on the cover.
Didn't want to talk about it.
Didn't want to talk about it, but you're still on the cover.
We're in the closet.
Yeah. All right, that's all I got, man.
All right, so really cool deal. Thanks to Spencer and Donnie for helping. Really fun times. Remember, if you have any questions, just email me, that kind of thing. And we appreciate all your guys' support and sharing this with your family and friends. And we'll check you out next time. Remember to like, comment, subscribe, all that kind of stuff. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Bye.
We work with some great companies, and here's a list of those right now. Dunlop Motorcycle Tires, Wisco Piston, Vinco Air Shocks and Dirt Bike Parts, FMF Exhaust, Decal Works Graphics, Pro-X Racing Parts, Recluse Clutch Revolution, Motion Pro Specialty Motorcycle Tools, Works Connection, Uni Filter, Klotz Oil, Kometic Gasket, MX Plastics, JE Pistons, Cardo Systems, ODI Bars and Grips. And remember, if you shop Rocky Mountain, use our link from our site, Linktree, or link in description of the videos. Thanks for watching and listening. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe.